Welcome back to Booze and Buffy, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel the series, one by one. There will be no spoilers for future episodes, but we will be discussing details from this and all previous episodes. I'm Harrison, and... oh, penis.
And I'm Jason, just sitting here having a little PTSD, seeing that worm making all those tunnels and... thinking about that mole problem that I had in my backyard last year. Oh, yeah. I'm weird, sorry. Harrison, what episode are we watching this week?
Yes, we are watching Buffy Season 7, Episode 2, Beneath You. This is the one where the Scoobies help a young woman who's being pursued by a giant worm monster. And they are joined by Spike, who is doing his best to be a totally normal guy.
He wasn't, even before what happened at the end of 6, he wasn't that good at doing that. Beneath You was written by Douglas Petrie and was directed by Nick Mark and originally aired on October 1st, 2002.
Yes. All right, hit it. Jason.
Harrison.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right.
All right. Tell the sexy people what you're drinking today.
All right. Well, this is for the sexy people only.
If you're not sexy, cover your ears. If you're an SNL cast member, cover your ears.
Like Dennis Hopper's character in Blue Velvet, this week I am drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Nice.
That one goes out to you, Skylar.
I am drinking some white wine.
Oh, what?
It's a Pinot Grigio. I realized, like, as we were about to start recording, I was like, huh. Like, I don't have any red wine. John, honestly, is probably in the process of buying some right now. I was like, the only beer we have is this PBR. We've got, like, rum. So I could probably concoct a rum punch, but that involves pineapple juice, which I know you are not a fan of.
Not necessarily.
So I was like, well, this is what we got today.
Yeah, and the reason that I'm not sharing the wine with Harrison, sharing and drinking the wine with Harrison, is dry whites are probably the only type of wine that I avoid.
Yeah.
Like, they do nothing for me. I utilize them in cooking sometimes, like when I'm making a risotto, but that's ooh, really about it.
Risotto sounds really good.
But let me get this.
Nice. Ooh, sizzle, sazzle.
That's for all you ASMR people.
AKA not me. I can't stand ASMR. I feel like I have the exact opposite reaction to most people. Like, I know most people find it, like, very relaxing and, like... and it just puts me on edge. I don't know why. I don't know why. All right. A toast. Here is a toast to good friends, good times, and good places.
Here, here.
Here, here. Cheer, do cheer. I don't know what's going on.
I can confirm that he wasn't drinking that white wine beforehand. I don't know where this is coming from.
Nope, this is just me.
It was just Harrison.
So yes, apologies to our listeners. This is coming a couple days late. We were going to record on Tuesday. And then, we had a little weather. We at our house, we just got a lot of rain and thunder and lightning, and we got a little bit of hail. How were things over at your house?
It didn't seem that serious, mm-hmm. but I was hearing about possible tornado touchdowns in different places.
Yeah,
it definitely... overall, just bad weather.
Yeah.
Now, I made the scheduling error of thinking that, oh, we can just push recording to Thursday because I'm totally free then. I'm not totally free. I have rehearsals on Mondays and Thursdays for a show that I'm in. So that's just me being completely unaware of that.
Well, it's all fine, you know. We decided better safe than sorry. And, mm-hmm. and the weather, you know, did get pretty bad for people east of us. I know, like, I was checking in with my family in Oldham County because they got hit hard. I do think some small tornadoes touched down. Not nearly as bad as a couple years ago in western Kentucky.
Oh, but, Lord.
But, you know.
In Mayfield.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, so. Hope that anybody who was affected by it is doing okay.
Yes.
So yeah. If we have any not-so-local listeners but still in the KY area. Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's talk about Beneath You. This was an episode that I came into really excited about. I was like, I really, really like this episode. And I came away not disappointed necessarily. I still like the episode, but the back half of that this episode is doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
I'm not gonna lie. I feel almost exactly the same as I did last episode, mm-hmm. where the most of the episode just kind of seemed just an ordinary Monster of the Week mm-hmm. episode, and then you had the very last scene. You're like, whoa,
yeah. So, we start in Frankfurt, Germany, as we usually do. And we have a young woman with bright red hair being chased near a nightclub by the same hooded figures we saw last week. Now, I made a mistake before we started the episode, or while we were listening, because I was like, this is giving me Run Lola Run vibes. I wonder if that was the inspiration. So I went and I grabbed my DVD of Run Lola Run and I looked and I was like, oh, this came out in 2005. So I guess not. Run Lola Run came out in 1998.
Maybe it was that DVD.
I think
that
DVD
out.
Was released in 2005.
By the way, Harrison is referring to the movie that is, you know, most known as Lola Rent.
Yes.
Which is the actual original German title of the film.
Correct.
Oh my god, I just realized how well actually that sounded. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Great movie. I've only seen it once, but I really liked it. So I was like, oh, must be a coincidence. And now I am retracting my must be a coincidence. And I am stating definitively that I think this is a deliberate homage to that film. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately,
by the way, I immediately knew that we were in Germany because there was a sign that said Parkplatz,
nice.
Which is parking space.
I like that, Parkplatz.
Yeah,
because Platz does mean to like sit slash like you
know that's Zetzen, but Platz I kind of think more of just like place.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitzplatz is another word. It's like a place where you sit.
Okay. I know Zitz Probe. That's the part of a musical rehearsal where you sing with the band / orchestra for the first time.
I actually haven't heard that before, so look at that. We're both learning things.
This is an educational podcast.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
power bottoms and power tops. What are they? Reference our previous episodes.
That was I know Ben was on that episode. Was that I Only Have Eyes for You?
Quite possibly.
I think that was that episode where Jason got a crash course in power tops and power bottoms. So this young woman, who I'm going to name her Lola. She, unfortunately, despite putting up a pretty good fight, she is unable to escape. And she is stabbed to death.
Yeah, I hope you guys are okay with women getting murdered at the beginning of all these episodes, because we've got an unfortunate trend happening.
Yeah, I think a pattern is starting to emerge. She then rolls over, and a voice from her, very deep voice, says, "From beneath you, it devours." I forgot that we, so this is kind of our, From Beneath You It Devours is kind of our arc words for this season, and I forgot that we got them this early on. That is where we get our title, Beneath You, which serves several purposes.
I believe it's also a reference to Buffy saying that Spike is beneath her.
I agree. I think it's obviously a reference. I think it's doing a lot of heavy lifting with the From Beneath You Devours. I think it's a deliberate callback to that was Fool for Love, I believe. Which has a lot of thematic tie-ins to this episode with Spike. And, of course, the literal threat of the episode is coming from beneath them.
That's what's called a triple entendre.
Triple on. Speaking of things that rhyme with on, Dawn awakens Buffy. Flawless transition.
I'm honestly impressed.
Awakens Buffy from a nightmare, which is this previous scene. She tells Dawn what she saw, and continuing this kind of trend from the previous episode, they discuss how they don't know what the threat is, but they're on their toes because something bad is coming. I came just so close to starting to sing that terrible song from Wicked. The stupid goat song.
Bad.
I hate that. I really like Wicked. I hate that song. I hate that song so much. And when we went and saw Wicked, when it was here a couple months ago, and John had never seen it before, we got to that song, and I like started to groan, and he was like, "What?" And I was like, "This song's just really stupid." At the end of the song, he was like, "Oh my god, that was really fucking stupid."
Like, yeah, it's very much kind of like a plot. Like, it's a song that's very much just there to advance the plot. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad song, but it definitely ups the chances that it could be a bad song in a musical.
Yeah. Elsewhere, erstwhile in Sunnydale, something is tearing through the ground, presumably near Sunnydale High, because it causes the basement to shake around Spike as he tries to catch a rat while talking to himself. Totally normal. Everything's normal. The next morning, Xander is driving Buffy and Dawn to Sunnydale High. Xander's lamenting his, you know, singleness. Buffy's like, your last relationship ended literally at the altar. That's not something you just bounce right back from.
True.
I like this whole conversation between the three of them. I like how they've, after the events of last season, events with a capital E, it does seem like Dawn, Buffy, and Xander have formed a little family unit. Obviously, these people are family to one another, but I liked seeing Xander has taken on a bit of a paternal role for Dawn here. It's subtle, but it's sweet.
And also, it's, as mentioned later on in the episode, this is the gang.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is
scattered.
Yeah, they're either scattered emotionally or geographically. Yeah. Or both.
Or dead. I mean, just... Principal Wood at the school takes Buffy to her cubicle, her desk. Gives her kind of a lowdown of the job. She's there to not... she's there to listen. To be an accessible person for the students who's close to their age. She thanks him for the opportunity. She's still a little confused. She's like, I didn't finish college, right? But, no, he's, He's very encouraging of her. She's very delighted to find out that she can give detentions. I believe was something Willow was asking back in season two when she took over for Jenny. Am I correct?
That sounds about right.
The way the power just immediately goes to their heads.
Well, I mean, we have a full-on example of power going to Willow's head.
Yeah. But there's a very, very funny moment where Wood is like, if you're not careful, these kids will eat you alive. She's like, oh, you heard about Principal Flutie then. He makes a very bad joke, and he references...
Like, the only three things that these kids understand are
the boot, the... something else that starts with a B, and a Bomba Clash? Is that... let's see if the wiki mentions. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
I was kind of hoping that I could just Google search and it would pop up. now I'm looking is like lyrics for an Alan Jackson song called The Boots. Just gonna throw in random letters and tables. Nope, I don't need to know about Boot Barn. The Boot, the Bomba Clash. Apparently it's a song.
Oh, okay.
Or just like completely spelled it wrong.
Well.
No, never mind. That's just them trying to get me to listen to this Alan Jackson song, The Boot. He makes a reference that is probably outdated as shit.
Yeah.
Which he like notes like nobody knows what a Bomba Clash is or whatever, and
Buffy's like, it's a Turkish weapon used to like...
Yeah.
I thought that was very funny. I love the... And I know that's part of the point of the entire show, is this juxtaposition between petite, blonde, young woman, and she's got a, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of weapons. Love that for her.
All right, Alexis.
But love that journey for her. Buffy does go down to the basement looking for Spike, but she does not find him. Jason, why don't we hop on a plane, head over to England for a moment, literally just for a moment. Willow is about to return.
Oh, excuse me. It is the... And Buffy, relax. There's only three things these kids understand. The boot, the bat, and the bastinada.
Bastinada!
He laughs, but then notices that Buffy isn't reacting. It's a bad joke. It's the bastinada. No one ever knows what that thing is. And Buffy says, wooden rod used to slap the soles of the feet in Turkish prisons, but if made with the correct wood, makes an awesome billy club.
Very good. We were so far off.
Yeah, thank you, IMDb.
Yes!
See if like that's a reference to like anything in particular, because I'm kind of interested. Keep going.
A taxi is waiting for Willow to take her to the airport because she is going to return to Sunnydale because this unknown threat is she is needed to fight it off. But she's very worried. She's worried about, you know, her own powers. She's worried about slipping into her, you know, into bad habits. And mostly she's worried that her friends will reject her after what she did last season. You know, Giles tells Willow that he's like, you know, it's not very comforting. He's like, they might reject you, but, like, they're gonna need you.
I actually like that line.
I do too.
Sunnydale might reject you, but it will need you.
I do too.
Yeah.
I understand why Willow doesn't find it particularly comforting.
So how?
But I like how he's being frank with her.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm a little reminded of when Giles last season, when Giles does leave and doesn't come back until the end of the season, and he's like, and I think it. it's a little similar. Like, he's realizing, and I think he might do a better job of it in this episode.
Yeah.
He is real. I know you're still, like, not a fan, but he is realizing that he knows that the Scoobies see him as an invaluable resource,
mm-hmm.
a mentor, and in some cases a father figure. But he realizes that part of his responsibility as that person of authority, like with that authority, is to make sure that they don't rely on him and they don't depend on him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's right. Like, you can prepare all you want, but there are some things that you can't find out in life until you actually go and experience it. So
yeah,
Willow needs to go and see the people that she's so afraid of.
Yeah. No, I'm with Giles this time. Mm-hmm. Because he's pushing her back to where she's supposed to be. He's helped her get to this point where she's ready, even if she doesn't feel like she's ready. And now he's giving her the push that she needs. And that's a wrap on Willow and Giles for this episode. We will not be checking in with them again. Back in Sunnydale, we meet Nancy for the first time. She is walking an annoying little dog.
Hey.
she doesn't even seem to give a shit about that dog.
That dog's just being a dog.
I find little dogs annoying.
Well, people find you annoying.
That's true. That's, no, you, for real.
Yeah, I mean, I get, like, that. I know that you're, like, more of a big dog person. I think a lot of people are. But also, like, don't be mad at the dog. The dog's just being a dog.
Well, this dog's about to get ate.
Yeah. For the trigger warning for people who need that, the dog does die in this episode.
She
probably should have put that at the top.
While Nancy's back is turned from the dog, something comes up through the pavement and chomps on that doggy.
You don't see it.
We don't see it. It's all off screen. She flees and runs into Xander, who takes her to the Summers' house. I mentioned this to Jason while we were watching it, but Nancy, very much just in the looks department, is giving me a mix of Christy Carlson Romano and Amy Jo Johnson. Thank you to Jason for reminding me of Amy Jo Johnson's name, because I was like, OG Pink Power Ranger.
Forget your first crush.
This actor is named Karina Alfrink. I don't know if she's well known for anything else. I thought she was good in this episode.
And I do love that, you know, a lot of victims normally don't get that drawn into all of the wacky shit that's going on between people in the Scoobies.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny to see her slowly, like, try to take in all of the wackiness that is the current state of the Scoobies.
There are some great reaction shots from her in this scene.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, half of her job in this episode is just reacting.
Yeah.
And she does a great job of it.
And you're right. We don't get to have someone, like a guest star of the week, get this, like, enmeshed in with the group. So it's a fun dynamic.
She is seeing the Scoobies at a very strange time.
Yes.
Transition period.
They are Don, Xander, and Buffy are consoling Nancy. They tell her they believe her. They're going to help her. They're going to figure this out. They're going to, hopefully, if her dog is alive, they will find it. We are joined unexpectedly by Spike. He has cleaned himself up. He has bleached his roots and combed his hair and is wearing a blue shirt. I love this blue shirt. I think it, first of all, just the color looks really good on him, but as a visual indicator, that things are off with Spike, it really works. Because we've never seen... If Spike is wearing color, it's red.
Mm-hmm.
Red and black are what Spike wears. So the blue is immediately really, really distinctive on him. It's also just like, this shirt's kind of slutty. It's like really tight. And it is like frequently, if he like moves at all, is like coming up and showing some ab. And I love that for me, for me personally.
Yeah, this shirt, I definitely think like it does a good job of showing off that something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate that shade of blue with his black pants. Like it is
very like...
Yeah, that is not a shade of blue that goes well with black. And I guess like I'm so used to seeing Spike in black that I don't like that blue on him at all.
That's funny. It also is great for the visual transition at the end when he's lost the shirt... which he calls it like anything, a costume.
Anything to lose your shirt.
but we still get that blue with the lighting at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But Buffy wants to help, or Spike wants to help. Buffy seems kind of reluctant. Buffy seems to want to accept, but is reluctant. Dawn and Xander are not having it. And yet during this, Nancy is getting the lowdown of like, oh, he's her ex. It's a little more complicated than that.
Also, this is the first time that Xander and Dawn find out that Buffy has previously run into Spike, in the whole basement ghoul in the school scenario.
Dawn takes a bit of an attitude with Buffy over this. And I'm like, girl, you don't need to know everything.
I mean, I can see where she's coming from because, as is mentioned a couple of times, and unfortunately we get a clip show of it. Yeah. I mean, the last time that they saw Spike was just after he tried to rape her. Mm-hmm. He tried to rape Buffy. And the, like, if that, and whether it's appropriate or not, If a friend of mine was letting somebody who attempted that back into their life, I'd want to know, and yeah. I'd probably want to be there and be like, no, don't do that. Call the goddamn cops. I know that the police in Sunnydale can't handle most of the shit that's going on. They couldn't handle Spike, but they could handle like a random guy coming back into your life. But no, I understand Dawn's concern, and I don't fault her for it.
Yeah.
I get that she's like snippy about it, but This all comes from a place of really caring about Buffy and really hating what Spike did to her.
I agree. It's just her tone.
Dawn, I don't need that tone.
I do love... my favorite reaction shot from Nancy is Xander says something along the lines of just like... You know, you're not getting near Buffy without, like, lots of weapons or something. Something about weapons. I don't remember the exact line.
Spike says, like, oh, should we have it in private or in here? And Xander says, I vote for here, where there are lots of sharp weapons.
Yeah. And Nancy is just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. She's like, oh, I could have gone anywhere else in the city.
It also does become a very apparent that, Xander has taken a shine to Nancy pretty immediately, which...
Taken a shine? Are you like 80?
Yes. You know how much I love gin. Nancy seems to... we know later that she reciprocates, but we get a hint of this here where she's like, oh, your girlfriend... referring to Buffy, which I take personally to be her testing, like, getting the lay of the land. Like, are you a couple? No? Yeah?
Xander responds to me like, no, she's a girl, and she's a friend.
Oh my God, the way he reverted to his 16-year-old self in that moment was kind of
cute. I
think
even Dawn rolled her eyes at that.
I thought it was kind of cute, though. I find that very... I love, We were out Friday night, and we were talking with a friend of ours, who was telling us he'd gone on a date a couple nights before that had gone really, really well, and they had like a second date planned, and it was so funny watching him like almost becoming a teenager again with like. Just how excited he was and like that. I was like, oh, I love seeing that from people where like just that purity, that just the joy.
I get that.
Buffy and Spike talk privately. And he just says, I just want to help. She's like, you better not say sorry. And he's like, I'm not going to. So she does agree. She tells Xander to take Nancy home to drive, not walk. And Buffy and Spike are going to patrol.
They're going to investigate the place where the poor dog was eaten.
Dawn and Xander do protest a bit, but Buffy lays down the law. She's like, no, this is what's happening. Not up for discussion. So, and then Dawn's like, and I'll be here, the command center. Everyone check in with me. And then she's like, I'll just be here doing my homework. But the first thing sounded cooler. You're right, Dawn. Dawn, this is your attitude that you need to have. Spike is leaving, Dawn calls him back. And she tells him, she's like, you sleep, right? And he's like, weird fucking question, yeah? And she's like, I know I can't take you in a fight, even with your chip, but, like, if you ever hurt my sister again, you will wake up on fire. Yes, Don!
What a great threat, too. Oh, my gosh.
I love it. I also, in this scene and in the next, I just really appreciate... that the show does not shy away from using the word rape to describe Spike's actions. And I understand that it can be triggering for some people, but I mean, what he did was really, really serious.
Yeah.
And it needs to be addressed without minimizing what it was.
All that being said, when she touches his hand and you get like the brief flashback of
unnecessary.
Yeah, that was unnecessary. Like you could have like their hands touch and Buffy immediately jerk her hand back and get the same.
I would argue you would get that would be a better, like, even outside of just like the unnecessary, like, unneeded flashback of the assault. It's just the way it is now. It's just so on the nose. It's
yeah, like, and this isn't the first time that Buffy and Angel have done that, and like had this like brief little glimpse, like, oh hey, do you remember this?
Yeah, I do remember because we've been discussing it. Like,
yeah, you don't forget something like that, but you also don't need to see it again.
Yeah, it's I think like the flow of the scene and the tone of it would have worked better because I do like the moment of. You know, that physical touch happening. And yeah, and her visceral recoil. So it just, the unnecessary flashback cheapens it.
And again, we've talked about this before. I think every instance that they've tried doing this, we always said, like, it would have been better if they didn't.
It's just kind of insulting. It's like, do you think I'm stupid?
There's one moment that comes in an episode later on in this season that I actually do kind of like the flashback for.
I think that the tone of a flashback like that, it can be useful, particularly if we're recontextualizing something. Mm-hmm. If we're seeing, if they're showing us something again through the lens of new information, okay. But yeah, this just like. Here to remind me, and it's like
those brief flashbacks. I'd say probably the most effective use of them that I can recall, not in this series but just in general, is, I'd say, the end of The Usual Suspects.
Yes, yeah. Because we are recontextualizing literally everything about that movie.
Yeah, it's like, you can't really say, like, what... Like, just watch that movie. It's a fantastic movie.
It's so good, but I do have to say, I was disappointed when I watched it. Not because of the actual film, but that's one of those movies where I knew going in that there was a twist.
Mm.
And that movie, if you don't know there's a twist, I'm sure that the end of that movie is shocking. But going into the movie knowing there's a twist, I was like, well, it's very obvious what it is.
Well, like, I guess we probably ruined it for people who haven't seen it.
I mean,
it's still a really good movie.
It is still a very good movie. And I haven't watched it since that first time. So it is one that I would like to rewatch. I think I will appreciate it more not going, well, I've already figured it out, the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I do feel like that is a Kevin Spacey movie that I will be able to separate artist from art. So as we mentioned, Buffy and Spike are investigating the spot where the dog was eaten. Spike says that, you know, the spirits in the school are what caused him to go crazy. Now that they're gone, he's A-okay.
I just want, like, Carol Kane to come out in her, Princess Bride makeup. Liar! Watched that one recently for a movie night, that's in my head.
and
the woman that just randomly goes, boo!
But yes,
man, that'd be a hell of a double feature. The Usual Suspects and the Princess Bride.
Natural companions. Remember that one year we were at the cabin and we did a Mean Girls Princess Bride double feature? That was a good combo.
I don't even know if it was just a double feature. I think, like, later that night we might have also just watched Evil Dead.
I think we were just
marathoning movies at that point.
I just remember distinctly we went from Mean Girls. I know it was this order because we went from Mean Girls to Princess Bride.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because there's a spot in the movie where, if you know it, Princess Buttercup, like, jumps from, like, the castle wall.
Yeah, to escape.
And I went, and that's how Princess Buttercup died. And
we had a couple people there who hadn't seen this movie before, and they were like, wait, really? Referencing Regina George getting hit by the bus in Mean Girls, like, and that's how Regina George died. No, not really.
I'm just kidding. But she was hurt. I also distinctly remember the first time I watched Mean Girls going, holy shit, she dies? Like...
Now that you say that, I'm trying to think if there's a Rachel McAdams movie that I've seen where she dies, not her character, but like the character that she is playing at that time dies on screen. Because spoilers for The Notebook.
Like
her character does die, but it's when she's much older and played by a different actress.
Yeah.
And nothing is coming to mind right away.
Yeah. I was about to say,
And I've seen a lot of Rachel McAdams movies.
You know what shocked me about Rachel McAdams was...
how perfect she is.
I mean, that. But when she was recently... when she recently appeared on SNL to introduce Renee Rapp, which, very sweet, old Regina George, new Regina George, love that. And then she was in, like, a sketch. That was her first time she's ever appeared on SNL.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, no.
She's
hosted.
Because no, she hasn't.
I was like, no, she's hosted because she's in those, like, high school theater sketches that they do. And I think the one I was thinking of was...
Emma Stone.
Not Emma Stone. Elizabeth Banks.
Okay.
But then I was like, holy shit, she didn't host in 2004 when she was... back-to-back in Mean Girls and The Notebook and was blowing up. Mean Girls, a.k.a. written by Tina Fey. Like, how was she not on SNL that year? That's mind-blowing to me. No, yeah. Also, petition for Rachel McAdams to host SNL.
You know me. Let's see. I would love for Rachel McAdams to host and musical guest. See, I'm trying to think of like an artist currently, and I don't listen to a lot of current artists. I'm kind of. I go for an Olivia Rodrigo performance again.
Yeah. I was thinking Florence and the Machine, but...
Oh, I'd be down for that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell, Rachel McAdams hosting with musical guest Florence and the Machine.
Featuring Olivia Rodrigo. Also, petition for a Florence and Olivia Rodrigo collab. Those vibes are so different, but I love it. Anywho, Buffy is
enough with our SNL wish list.
Buffy is very uncomfortable around Spike, understandably, and she, you know, he tells her that he's not going to apologize, he's not going to ask for forgiveness because what he did was so awful, and she doesn't owe him anything. Correct.
Yeah.
But
all the other things that she has to process, she's also processing the fact that, like, Spike seems completely lucid,
yes,
as opposed to the last time she saw him.
Don't worry, that won't last.
Yeah.
So she, but he does say that he's changed, and she's like, yes, I can tell, and that is what concerns me.
I don't know what you've changed into.
Yeah. So, Xander is taking Nancy home. They're awkwardly flirting.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love how terrified Nancy is when she says, I'm flirting with you.
It's cute.
It is.
I like Nancy. She's a fun addition. It's unfortunate that things don't pan out between her and Xander.
It does seem like for a hot minute that she could be like a new supporting character for the show.
Yeah. It's realistic the way things turn out, but, mm-hmm. Unfortunately though, the moment is ruined by the ground rumbling around them and the giant worm chasing them down the hallway, where it meets its one weakness,
stairs.
A couple of stairs.
Just like Daleks in classic Doctor Who.
I really was like, my little wormy dude. There's very little preventing you from getting them. Like,
it would have been funny if, like, instead of screaming, he's just like, I'll get you right now. What's it for these stairs?
You very much sounded like a Meeseeks.
Look at me, I'm a big worm. Actually, I think that's more Mr. Poopy Butthole.
A little bit. The Meeseeks and Mr. Poopy Butthole have...
I mean, obviously, it was the same voice actor, right. But Mr. Meeseeks is more like, I'm Mr. Meeseeks, look at me!
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Yeah, Mr. Poopy Butthole was like, ooh-wee-wee!
First of all, the episode that introduces Mr. Poopy Butthole with the memory worms, one of my favorite TV episodes.
That's funny. I don't have any pictures of you in my phone, Beth. No, that...
Why would I have pictures of my family on my phone? We're not Mormon or dying.
Yeah, I get that, like, Rick and Morty isn't for everybody.
Absolutely.
But it is surprisingly high-concept sci-fi.
Uh-huh.
And... like, hits the mark on it more often than it should.
Yeah. 911, my wife shot an old family friend. And at the end, what did he say? It's like, he said he wished you had more bad memories of him. And then just like the sheer despair on Beth's face. Oh, that episode is so fucking funny.
I love, like, you describing that to an outside person, like, I just kind of, like, took that as normal when you said that's just so fucking funny, but you describing that to a person that doesn't know, right. You're like, the fuck is wrong with this guy?
That episode is so fucking dark. oh my gosh.
Woo.
So after the worm leaves, having been defeated, Xander's like, okay, well, I think we can safely say you're being targeted. And she's like, God damn it. First, my shitty, abusive ex-boyfriend, Ronnie, and now this fucking worm. And she, after a discussion in which the word wish is used, Xander's like, God damn it. I really love this, like, later seasons Buffy, when it's like, anyone says the word wish, and all the Scoobies are like, I'm sorry, did you say wish? Well, we know someone.
It's so funny, because it's not just for that. It's really like, you know, there's obviously, like, a lot of references to earlier adventures, but at this point, you know, the Scooby gang has seen some shit.
Seen some shit.
And if they hear about something, they're like, oh, is it this, this, or this? Because we know this, this, or this.
So they confront Anya at the Bronze while she is attempting to get a young woman to wish that her ex-boyfriend had no spine. I adore the moment where she's like, the young woman's just like, yeah, he's so spineless. And she was like, Anya's like, no spine, I can do that. Like, what? This table appears to be littered with LITs.
And judging that Anya's the one who's drinking them, I'm sure that she is LIT lit right now.
Oh, yeah. They confront Anya when she sees them. She just goes, oh, penis. Love that. Also, just real quick, Anya looking fine as hell. That haircut is so of the time, but she's rocking it.
Yeah, it makes her... I wanted to say that, like, it makes her feel older, but not physically older, more like mentally older.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. It's like a, oh, this person probably pays their bills on time.
Oh, you know Anya does not get late notices on her yeah, she's I know Anya is blonde the majority of the time, but I like the brunette on her. I think it suits her more. I don't know if Emma Caulfield is a natural blonde or a natural brunette. I think she's a natural blonde.
I'm trying to think of, like, the last thing that she posted on Instagram, mm-hmm. but I don't have anything off the top of my head that I can think of.
But they're like...
And I was like, well, wait a minute. She was in that... She was in WandaVision. Shit, that was in black and white!
They're like, Anya, did you turn this nice young woman's boyfriend into a giant worm monster? And Anya's like, you can see the wheels turning. Like, she's like, she's about to deny it and then just decides, ah, oh, fuck it. Yeah. She's like, yeah.
Yes.
And Nancy's like, that is not what I signed up for. We get a brief...
I kind of wonder if this, like, happened post Halfrick discussion, and so this was her kind of like overcompensating,
I think,
like trying to overcorrect her course.
I think that's exactly what it is, because she mentions later in the episode when talking to Xander that, like, you know, Halfrick's on her ass, Dipoffrin's on her ass, like, but yeah, no, she, Nancy gets a little more Scooby history when she finds out that Anya is Xander's ex, but also hooked up with Spike.
Who hooked up with Buffy. Yeah.
She goes, is there anyone that in this group who hasn't slept together? And Xander and Spike share a very hilarious look.
This reminds me of a moment in Grey's Anatomy. You know, it's a joke that everybody made as the series was airing. Well, it's still airing. But I remember, I can't remember if it was like a patient, a family member of a patient, or like just some random outside hospital official who, like, just looks around at some of the doctors like, is there any doctor in here who's not ridiculously attractive?
I saw a meme today that was like, Dr. Bailey, that's the woman who's like in charge, who's been on it like the whole run. Mm-hmm. It was like
she was like the head, she was like the
head surgeon or whatever, or something.
Well, I don't know if she's the head surgeon. I just know like when the show started, like she was the person that all the all of the interns answered to.
Yeah, the meme was like, Grey's Anatomy is an existential horror show about Dr. Bailey's failed 20-year attempt to stop her interns from fucking each other and dying.
I mean, that happens way too frequently. I think I always made the joke like, why do so many of these doctors die so much? They work at a hospital.
Dude, I was, someone was sharing a clip that I thought was a joke at first from ER of like one of the main characters dying when a helicopter fell on them.
No, so I remember that because, you know, that guy was a real dick to people. And then, in one episode, he's like on the roof of the hospital, and this helicopter's there, and he's just like, I can't remember if he's not paying attention where he's going, he just doesn't know that the helicopter's like about to take off, and his arm gets cut off by the back propeller. And so after that, like,
and then later he gets killed by a helicopter.
Well, no, like, so after that, like, I think it's for a whole season, he becomes like a much less of a dick, but he obviously like is minus one arm and has an absolute fear of helicopters and of being like, he never goes up to the helipad on the roof. But then one time he's leaving the hospital and a helicopter is literally crashing and it falls down on him and he like looks up, sees it, looks down, just says no, and then it crashes on
him. Was the clip that I saw. Yeah. Oh my god. I really don't watch medical dramas. It's not really my bag, but I don't know. This sounds unhinged. I might need to. I might, let's, what, 15 seasons of ER, 23, what, of Grey's Anatomy?
Plus all the spinoffs. Yeah. I don't know, dude. Now I'm actually kind of wondering, did ER get spinoffs?
Ooh.
I think it is very important to remember that ER is a much different show when it starts than,
sure,
when it ends. And you know how like last episodes of TV shows typically try to do something special. I was just out of curiosity like wondering, oh, what's the big thing for the last episode of ER? And they said like it wrapped up some storylines and then it like ended with a full shot of the hospital, because apparently they never ever showed the entire hospital in one shot.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
So, not to take us even further off course, but speaking of genres of show that I don't typically watch, I'm not like a legal drama type of person either. I really don't watch a lot of procedurals. But after many years of seeing, you know, all the praise that it gets and its spinoff show has gotten, I started watching The Good Wife. It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm only like 10 episodes maybe in.
I'm guessing you brought that up because of ER alum Juliana Margulies being the star.
Actually, I was more just thinking of like, I don't really watch medical dramas. Okay, I don't really watch legal dramas. But yes, that is also
All right.
And it's so funny. Like every episode, I'm like, holy shit. Like even like minor character, like one-off guest stars, they've got like well-known actors. Like there was like Martha Plimpton was in one of the early episodes playing like the opposing counsel and like...
That is one of the cool things about procedurals, since you typically can get, like, whether it be in legal dramas, in crime procedurals, or in medical dramas, you can get, like, it's very easy to create these one-off roles. Patients, opposing counsel, victims of crimes, and...
Perpetrators of crimes.
Yeah, and it's so fun to see just like how, like who ends up showing up on there. Like I think a lot of people know that Robin Williams was like a guest star on Law and Order SVU at one point. But yeah, like so many people have made, like so many actors. I bet like you take any well-known actor that you know, look up their filmography, there's probably like a one-off and a procedural in there.
Especially
like Law and Order.
Yeah. Well, I was like, this is before she was as famous as she is now, but Viola Davis has got like Law and Order like four or five times on her, like, various judges and like also just the cast of The Good Wife. Those are some hot fucking people. Juliana Margulies, Matt Zuckerre, Josh Charles, Christine Baranski, who plays Diane. I don't remember the actor's name, but Kalinda, like, oh my god, she is hot. Yeah, it's a good show. I like it.
It's not just eye candy. That's just one of the great...
It's great when a show is good and hot. That's what I'm really after. Like Buffy. We get a moment here, though, back to Buffy, where Anya and... Anya just gets a good look at Spike, and her whole demeanor changes, and she's, like, looking, like, deep into his eyes, and she's like,
she knows.
Oh my god, how did you get it? How did you do it? And he's, you can see the mask that he's been wearing start to slip. He starts to panic a bit. Buffy's like, what the fuck is she talking about? I think this is so cool how Anya can just not immediately notice when she comes in, but like when she has the moment and like really looks, she's like, she can sense it.
She specifically says, I can see you now.
Yeah.
So, like, does she see people's souls?
I guess so. Spike, though, is not interested in this information getting out. So, he punches Anya. I'm not laughing at him punching Anya. I'm laughing at the ridiculousness of of this whole situation. Mm-hmm. Anya puts her demon face on. She throws him across the room, and she's like, I'm gonna kick your ass. This is where I'm a bit disappointed in this scene, because I was fully ready for a Spike and Anya brawl.
I like how people are originally worried about Spike hitting, almost said Emma for some reason, I know the reason, because it's the actress's name, for hitting Anya, and then everyone's like, oh my god, he hit a girl, and then she, like, immediately flings him across the room.
You can definitely hear some extra going, dude just clocked her! But no, Buffy steps in, and this just becomes a Buffy and Spike fight. And, like, I like a Buffy and Spike fight, but there are a dime or dozen in the series. I am disappointed that we didn't... I would have liked to have seen Anya kick a little ass here.
Kind of another failing of this season. Anya's position, like, sets up the potential for a whole lot of different confrontations that she could have. Mm-hmm. And outside of, like, one episode... in particular, that you really, really love.
Top 10 episode for me.
It doesn't utilize that, and it kind of stinks.
Unfortunately, I feel like that's a thing we're going to be saying about this season, is outside, a lot of the cast, unfortunately, has little to do. Anya being, I think, probably one of the biggest offenders of that. And all of that is in service to characters and or storylines that take up more time, screen time than they should, which is always very frustrating in a final season. I'm thinking of Sex Education's recent final season, which pushed, like, literally just got rid of a bunch of characters in favor of new characters, but also the characters that stayed behind. I mean, fucking poor Adam, while I did like his story, was...
Completely cut off from Eric.
Yeah.
And
the rest of the cast. He only interacts with the rest of the main cast when he goes to the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is one of your major characters spending the entire final season completely siloed off. That's a problem.
Yeah, that was... I did enjoy his storyline. It was one of the few storylines that I actually looked favorably on. The other one was probably, like... even though I didn't like the whole, like, her being with Isaac, Amy, not Amy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Amy? Okay. Yeah.
Like in this case, the actor and the character are both named Amy.
Because I was just thinking of, like, her Instagram handle. But, yeah, Amy, like, finally kind of coming to terms with, like, that art at the end of it. I wasn't a fan of Isaac, but that's kind of just because, like, they set him up to really get a bad impression of him.
Yeah.
And when we were trying to make it work, it didn't work for me.
I'm really excited because she, Amy, is going to be on the third season of The White Lotus. And I'm like, yes, her energy fits in right with that Mike White style of, like...
I haven't seen The White Lotus.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. There's...
It's one of those shows that when it premiered, everybody just said that it was, like, the greatest fucking thing in the world.
And it got memed to hell and back.
Yeah. It's like, it's so hard to watch a new show that everybody's into. God, this makes me sound like such a hipster. But it's when you try to watch a new show that a lot of other people are into, like, the hype is, there's so much hyperbole in the hype that if it doesn't, like, if you watch it and come away not liking it, it doesn't, like, meet expectations or whatever, not only are you disappointed, but also you feel a little cut off from everybody else. Like, why does everybody else like this, but I don't?
I know we had this discussion a few weeks ago of how I just, like, don't have that feeling. I'm just, like... And I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. I get it. But I just, like...
I'm worried about what other people think. I'm more just kind of think, like, am I missing something? Mm-hmm. Like, is there... Because there have been times when I've watched stuff and the point just kind of goes over my head sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'll flat out admit that. And then people are like, oh my God, this was, like, amazing for these reasons. And I'm like, dude, I didn't get that at all.
We really enjoyed it. We also watched it kind of after the second season had been out for a while. But it's just, I like Mike White a lot. His show, Enlightened, from about 10 years ago that starred Laura Dern, was excellent. RIP ended after two seasons, did not wrap up. I've actually been hoping that The White Lotus's, like, success would have people be like, third season of Enlightened. But alas, that has not been the case. It's funny. The cinematography, they film in these beautiful places. And this great cast. You've got, like, Connie Britton.
I do like Connie Britton.
Second season has Aubrey Plaza. Obviously Jennifer Coolidge was on the show. I'm suddenly blanking on all these.
Aubrey Plaza's fun, but I feel like from what I've seen of her outside of Parks and Rec, it seems like the only thing that she does is the same character that she did in Parks and Rec.
I would expand your Aubrey Plaza.
I mean, I'll admit, like, I haven't seen too much more. I mean, she was able to, like, make it into something interesting for Legion, but. It also just feels like that's also like her mode that she's in anytime she has a public appearance or an interview or anything like that.
Oh yeah, that's definitely her persona. Mm-hmm. I would recommend Ingrid Goes West, if you have not seen that. She plays a woman who becomes, like, obsessed with this social media influencer played by Elizabeth Olsen. It's very good. What was the one?
It's so funny that, like, you make all these recommendations like I have time to watch it.
The Black Bear was a really... That one was weird. That one was trippy as hell. I liked that one. And she's really good on The White Lotus. There's another movie that I'm trying to remember that was, like... I don't remember. Anyway, Buffy. So, yeah, we get this fight between Buffy and Spike. Okay. And then this is Nancy's cue to fucking leave. She's like,
I've had it with this. This is more trouble than it's worth at this point.
I'd rather just get eaten by the worm. So she runs. Buffy follows. She tells Xander to try to get Anya to reverse the wish on Ronnie.
Spike also,
Spike follows, yeah. Nerd. So Buffy arrives just in time to rescue Nancy as she's being attacked again. She Spider-Mans in from nowhere. We're not exactly sure what this rope is attached to and what it's spun from, but it's cool. Spike intervenes and he gets a metal pole. Hitting the demon a bunch with it.
Has his signature line, the big bad is back.
Yes. And he goes for a stab. Unfortunately, this comes at the worst possible moment because Xander has successfully convinced Anya to reverse the wish. She is reluctant to do so because of how much pressure she is under from her boss.
Think of it as a much tamer version of the end of Becoming Part 2.
Yeah. Ronnie turns back into a human just as Spike stabs him in the shoulder with the pole, which activates his chip. He screams in pain and then, realizing what he's done, starts freaking the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And the mask he has been wearing this whole episode is fully gone. Buffy's like, I don't have time for your weird shit, Spike.
Yeah, she's calling 911 and she's like, Spike, whatever you're doing, do it somewhere else.
Which I don't blame her. I don't blame her in the slightest. But he goes on this nuts monologue. And then ends it with, from beneath you, it devours. And Buffy's like, God damn it, now I have to engage. Because he said that weird cryptic shit that the girl said in my dream. God damn it. God damn it. So, Xander and Anya arrive. Xander has them stay with Ronnie while they wait for the ambulance. Nancy's once again fucked off. She's like, I'm done with this shit.
Xander's like, yeah, she's not going to call me.
She's not going to call me. And then...
You know what? I feel bad for Xander, but also, I mean...
I don't blame her.
Yeah.
Can't blame a girl.
It's like... You shouldn't judge a dating decision based on a friend group of the person, but... In this case, it's okay to make that judgment.
She's not even been made aware of the body count of this friend group yet. So
also, you still haven't brought back the witch that was just killing people a few months ago.
Yeah. Xander's like, you did the right thing. This guy's gonna be fine. And she's like, this shit's about to get way fucking worse. We did also have a conversation between them earlier where Anya blames Xander for everything going wrong in her life. You know, she had friends, she had a job. Well, she still has her job. She had coworkers she was close to. She, you know, all of this. A fiancé. And he blew all that up when he left her at the altar. So he doesn't have any say in her life. And she's right. But Xander's also right when he tells her, eventually that excuse isn't going to work anymore.
Also, when your actions, however justified you may think they are, mm-hmm. start, affecting innocent people...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's bad.
Whatever bullshit you have about a broken heart, that gives you no right to
hurt people.
Yeah.
Also, we totally skipped over one of the funniest moments of the episode... Where Buffy's talking to Anya, and he's like, that worm you created ate her dog. And Anya just goes, oh, puppy!
It's the Yorkshire that makes you move.
So now we get this final scene. Buffy finds Spike in a very blue lit church. he has taken off his shirt. He calls it a costume. He throws it away. He makes a comment about her being there to use him. He starts to unbuckle his pants. She's like, whoa, no. And he just starts going off in this rambling, metaphorical monologue. He keeps saying the spark, all of this. And Buffy is bewildered until he says, Angel should have warned me. And the second he says Angel's name, it all clicks for Buffy.
Yeah.
Sarah doesn't say anything. Well, she does eventually say your soul. But, like, she has this moment where all the pieces are falling into place, and it's just masterful, silent eye face acting of her.
She's really good at that.
She's so good at it. He says that there are... he hears voices in his head telling him to go to hell.
Because of all the things that he's done.
All the things he's done. She asks why he did it. She says that he needed to be the type of man who would never hurt her. And he turns and he drapes himself over this big cross, which immediately starts steaming. Buffy's crying. We end the episode on this beautiful shot of shirtless Spike draped over this cross, all the blue, it's all dark except for this light blue lighting, the steam coming off of his body, and Buffy just asks, Spike asks Buffy if he can rest now. It's a stunning ending.
It is. To a pretty mediocre episode.
Yeah. I was like, the episode itself, I'm like, okay. There were parts of it I really liked. There was a lot of really funny stuff in here. But it's very much just a monster of the week. And that's fine. You know, that is totally fine. But it's not one of the better monsters of the week. The slug itself is...
okay. There are shots of... I will say this. Like, it is a CGI creation. There are shots where it's moving... that looks like really bad CGI, like making the tunnels and the and like the cracks and stuff in the road. But the actual shots of the monster, there are shots that look like really good CGI, like the best CGI that the series has had at this point.
I agree. That's Beneath You. I'm going to go slightly lower score than last week. I'm going to give it a 3. Much like last week's episode, I was sitting at a 2.5, but this final scene bumped it up up to a 3 for me.
This episode was just forgettable for me, except for that last scene. Like, the minute that I realized what episode it was, I completely forgot about Nancy entirely. I was trying to remember, does she show up again in the season?
No,
she doesn't.
No, Nancy.
But I did remember, and I mentioned to Harrison, this is one of my favorite visuals of the series. It's a really good, like, just a great visualization, great screenshot.
Yeah.
2.5. That extra 0.5 is from the is from that ending scene. The thing about this season so far is that it feels like the characters are trying to get to where they are, where they need to be for the actual plot to progress. So much so that we only have just an inkling of what the big bad is for this season.
Yeah.
And it still feels like they're still not there yet, because we still need Willow to come back.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like we're spinning our wheels a little bit, and it's a little too early to be spinning your wheels this season, especially the last season.
Yeah. This was a thought I wanted to share too, and I forgot. This end scene feels like a mirror of the end of Afterlife, the third episode of season 6, when Buffy confesses to Spike that she had been in heaven. Thematically, I mean, obviously we've got a Spike confessing something to Buffy, with heavy religious imagery. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a bit of a counterpart to that scene as well.
Also, Afterlife, fantastic song by Avenged Sevenfold. Nice. All right.
Any other thoughts about Beneath You?
Not really. Like I said, these first two episodes, the main plot hasn't done a lot for me. The majority of what I've liked about both of these episodes are like these last scenes mm-hmm. that involve Spike. So
I'm interested to get for our discussion. It won't be our next week's episode because we have an Angel episode next.
Ooh, but, gotta get my recap muscles stretched out.
But the next Buffy episode. Oh, my mom's calling me. Our next Buffy episode, same time, same place, is one of my favorites of the season. I'm interested to see if we align on that one.
I'd have to remember what it's about.
we'll find out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Would you like to take us out?
Sure. Thank you for joining us on Booze and Buffy. We'll be back next week with Angel Season 4, Episode 1, Deep Down.
Wonder what that could refer to. I'm Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at Harrison Alexander Kaufman, and with much less frequency these days on Twitter at Harrison Kaufman. That's Kofffman.
And I'm Jason. You can find me on Instagram at YamaJ357, and also technically on X, but I'm not gonna lie, I don't use it that much. Yeah. So I guess if you want to like reach out and touch faith, then go for Instagram. Tell you what, that's kind of what I wanted to do in season 3 of Buffy, if you know what I mean. Reach out, touch fate.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Booze and Buffy, or you can email us at boozeandbuffy@gmail.com, and it's spelled out A-N-D.
And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Yes.
And, you know, we like to put some good out into the world at the end of these episodes. As I mentioned, some parts of our state were affected by some bad weather earlier this week. Not as bad as what we've had in the past, but, you know, we are going to see more things like this as the climate change crisis continues.
Just yesterday, there was a unusually serious earthquake mm-hmm. in New York City.
Yeah. You know, let's put some good into our climate. We only have one planet. Let's make it livable. Mm-hmm. All right. As always, go slay
and be gay.
Bye.
Bye.